called 1220. Another Saturday here together, and we have Bob today.
Yes.
Bob, it's good to have you here.
Thank you. I'm glad to be here.
Well, we have a great show today, and it's always a challenge, but we have we're able to do it here. We're going to recreate and actually discuss photographs on the radio, which you might think is challenging. I think the next hour we can do it. I have a very special guest today, someone I've actually admired their work for a long time, so I'm very happy that he's actually here in studio, Mike Evangelist.
Hey, Tom. It's great to be here.
And, Mike, we have a lot of fans of this show. At least a dozen, but a lot of our fans also follow Old Minneapolis. And if you follow Old Minneapolis, which 60,000 people in the metro do,
61,000.
That's right, because Jesse did put a 61,000 post this week. Trust me, the TC Media Now page wishes we could have 61,000 followers. And if you go to Facebook, you can like it right now. However, Mike Evangelist, you've seen his work there if you go to Old Minneapolis. And what Mike, and correct me if I'm wrong, Mike, you've been taking pictures for a long time. I don't want to date you here, but at least 40 years I can tell from some of the photos I've seen. And you did what I try to do as a young person, but I had the limitations of having 12 exposures in the Kodak disc camera. You had some better equipment than I did. Taking pictures of your surroundings, not just of people you knew, not just of your family or your dog, but you took pictures of your surroundings. Surroundings that in Minneapolis we've not always preserved. You take Minneapolis-St. Paul, and St. Paul has done a little bit better job of keeping their buildings intact and taking some preservation to what was old. Minneapolis, not so much, and there's reasons why and why not to. But tell me a little bit about your experience and why you took these photographs, and what was your motivation, and did you ever think that in 1975, taking pictures of Nicollet Mall, you'd have a very impressive-looking book right here in front of you?
Well, it's a long question. But basically, the answer is pretty simple, which is I started with photography in about, I think it was 1968, and I borrowed a 35mm camera from a friend, and I was fascinated by it, and I've always been fascinated by gadgets of all kinds, and I was into electronics and model airplanes before that. But I got this little camera. It was an Argus C3. Some people may know what that is, but a very rudimentary camera. But I tried to figure out how to use it. And I bought a little book for $1 at Radio Shack, which was How to Use a Camera. I still have that book. And I started to learn how to use it and to experiment with it. And it just captivated me, the idea of taking pictures of things that were interesting to me. And learning how to do it better and better. And that's basically the story of my entire life as a photographer. Taking pictures of things that interest me or captivate me in some way and trying to learn how to do it better than I did it the last time.
And was your background, did you have anyone in your family that was a picture taker? Every family has at least one picture taker. Did you have one in your...
Well, definitely my mother was always had her camera, but it was in the what I would call the sort of classical way of always having your camera, which means when you would take the roll of film to get it developed, it would have at least a year of photos on.
Right.
You'd have all the seasons, all the holidays on one roll, typically. And that was, I mean, it's unbelievable now in the digital era how much that has changed. But I was like that at first, because especially before I learned how to develop my own film. And I was just a kid, so it was expensive to take my film in and get it developed. And so I was a little miserly with the film in the early days.
And time-consuming, because let's take this back in perspective here, and I think that we have a good mix of ages that listen to this show, but there's a time, and I tell some young people in my family this, that you took 24 exposures of film, didn't know what it was going to be for, especially if you waited for a few months, you didn't know what was on that roll for weeks, and then you paid for it, and you paid for bad pictures you took. And then when you go to put it in your sticky album, which was the worst thing anyone ever could have done, to take pictures and put into stick albums.
Seemed like a good idea at the time.
You know, it's like so many things did, fashion and stick albums. But we have a generation now that I think everything is documented, maybe even over-documented, where it becomes less special. And if you see something over and over again, or if you see the same thing, or you see, we call them selfies now, you see these pictures, you look back at a picture from 3 years ago, that's downtown Minneapolis, or that's wherever that was, because we've seen so many pictures of it. It floats around the social media, or people pull their phone out and show you a picture. You look at these places here, and I'm looking at your book here, I'm looking at, especially at Blocky, I'm looking at even on pages of Pennies and Powers. These are names that for downtown shoppers for a generation was part of downtown living, downtown shopping. These are names forgotten now. Powers, no one knows who Powers is right now.
Well, even Donaldson's is fading pretty quickly into history.
Someone who's old enough to should remember told me that he was on my website and saw the downtown fire video. And that, for such a significant event in Minneapolis, so little film or video that exists, and a couple stations in town actually wanted my footage of that when it came for the big anniversary. But you to get back to you again, you took these pictures, and you had some access to some places here. I'm looking at the U.S. Post Office here. I'm looking at what I always thought the post office was like, boxes of letters. Looks like the Santa Claus sack of letters to the North Pole. You had some access here to some places here that not many people have access to.
Well, and that's so the story, you know, if you fast forward a little bit, I was captivated by photography, and I got a better camera for myself, and I kept learning and kept practicing and learned to develop my own pictures. And I pretty much always had the camera with me. When I was in high school, I was on the yearbook staff and the newspaper staff as a photographer. And this sort of opened up my eyes to a bunch of things. One is that I figured out I could go just about anywhere and take pictures because this camera sort of shields you from...
Mm-hmm.
You're not really part of the thing if you have a camera in your hand.
Well, plus you can look like press. If you have a picture there, no matter what age you are, you look like you belong there because you have a piece of equipment. I remember I had one of those big VHS cameras for a while, which no one should have been carrying around, but I did. Oh, you're with the crew. Go ahead. You come on in.
So true.
So you had this camera, and I'm guessing you had friends your age said, why are you wasting your money and time on taking pictures?
Actually had friends of like interests. So
that's great. That is great.
We all hung out in the dark room and spent every spare penny we got on cameras and film, basically. But what happened? So while I was in high school, I got a job at the post office.
Okay.
They had a special job program for students,
mm-hmm.
and so I worked part time in the evenings at the post office downtown Minneapolis. I rode the bus down there, and I pretty much always took my camera with me. So when I got down there, if I didn't have to start yet, I would walk around downtown, shoot pictures, and it was totally just for my own enjoyment. I never imagined that really anybody else would ever even see these images.
And these are a combination of print photographs and slides, correct?
Right. And, I mean, that was part of my experimentation. While in high school, I got pretty proficient at developing black and white film, but I didn't do color film. So
mm-hmm.
when I shot color film, it was a special thing because I had to pay money to get it developed.
Right.
Cost more. So most of the images that I took from that time were black and white. And I could do more sort of freer experimentation because it was cheaper.
And the book is Downtown, Minneapolis in the 1970s, and the pictures all by Mike Evangelist. And the text is written by Andy Sturdivant, who is a MinPost contributor. He's kind of the arts and culture MinPost contributor. So you're working for the post office. You're taking these great photographs, combination of slides and print. The post office was a great place to get some action. That's a great place to get some shots that, again, it's so America, but there's so few of us that are able to see what happens at the post office.
Well, and you know, if you look in the book, you'll see I have a few photos of working in the post office. And today, of course, you would never be allowed in a facility like that with a camera and to just wander around and take pictures. But nobody thought anything of it back then.
Mm-hmm.
And I was just the nut with a camera. You know, I went and got it out of my locker at break time, probably, and was walking around taking pictures.
How many rolls of film do you think you went through in a week or month?
Well, it wasn't a very big number, really, mm-hmm. looking back on it. And like I already mentioned, compared to digital cameras, where people shoot hundreds and hundreds of images.
Right.
But as I started to go through my old photo collection, and I'm still not done going through it, but I found in the neighborhood of 600 or 700 images from these locations. I have thousands of other images that are not related to Minneapolis.
And are you from Minneapolis? Did you grow up in Minneapolis?
Well, I actually grew up in New Brighton.
Okay.
But part of my family, anyways, was from Northeast Minneapolis over, you know, since the turn of the last century,
mm-hmm.
basically. So I always identify with Minneapolis, and I've worked downtown Minneapolis several times over the years.
And no offense to our great listeners in New Brighton or Maple, or where they come from, to be downtown Minneapolis at that point for a young person, there's a lot of glamour that comes with being downtown Minneapolis. It's where the hub of the whole metro was. This is an era I'm thinking lots of people going in and out. Mary Tyler Moore was working there, downtown Minneapolis. There's just so many great pictures of places at the Midwest Federal Building, one of the biggest banks in the state and sponsored everything, and now no one will remember what the Midwest Federal tree is right now.
Yeah, very true. And to me, one of the most fun things about this project is to share these images with other people and to hear their reactions, to talk to them about their reactions to these things. That many of these, if you look at them individually, are pretty ordinary scenes.
Mm-hmm.
It's just, there's one. It's Hennepin Avenue.
Mm-hmm.
Theaters, hotels, cars, things like that. And you could take a picture like that today. Mm-hmm. And if you saved it for 45 years, people would look at it and go, wow, that's really interesting. Look at the cars actually ride on the road instead of in the air.
Well, we're aiming toward that. Back to the Future, I think, turns 30 years old this month. There's so many things that we have to accomplish on this bucket list of the world.
Yes.
I make a joke that occasionally on the website, TC Media Now, I get asked, do you tape News Today? Well, the difference is there's news is collected everywhere now. So whatever there's a digital copy of whatever happened on Channel 4, 5, 9, 11 yesterday will be there forever. The second thing is, well, yes, and I'll post it 30, 40 years from now when no one remembers it. But it has to take a while to cure for a while.
And we could spend the whole hour talking about that, what you just said, that it'll be there forever.
Mm-hmm.
I'm not sure that's guaranteed. I think that's one of the biggest risks of so many photographs of everything that nobody assigns any value to them anymore because there's so many of them.
You mentioned you have 600 photographs from the 70s on my phone today, and I don't think that I'm a avid photo taker. I have 1,000 pictures on my phone right now. I think, or 3/4 of them, if they were gone tomorrow, I wouldn't even remember them. I wouldn't even know what they were. It was of something I wanted to remember, or if it was something I saw at Home Depot that I wanted to look at later. But that's what my photos are right now. We don't print photographs anymore either, which I think is unfortunate. People take these great trips. They have it on their iPad or their phone. We're not, slideshows, which people used to roll their eyes. I was taking slides up to the 2000s for my first digital camera. And you bring everyone in and do the slideshow with a clicker. And it sounds horrific if you have to look at someone's vacation slides of water. But again, it was a way you actually were displaying your photographs outside of a digital device, and you actually had to take some time and care to putting this carousel together of a show. And I think it's an art that I don't believe that the old days are necessarily better, but there are some elements from the old days or days bygone that I think would be valuable today.
Yeah, I'm with you on that.
So talk a little bit about your life. Did you get into photography professionally? I did look at your background a bit, and you've done some really fantastic things working with some great companies, both nationally and here locally. In fact, you worked for Shack Electronics. You mentioned Radio Shack. Shack Electronics, another piece of history that kind of a powerhouse, not even kind of a very big powerhouse in electronics here locally, and then they got really big, and then they disappeared, never to be heard from again.
Yeah, it was... I consider it my first professional job working at Shock Electronics. I worked at the post office, which is really a factory job working at the post office.
Mm-hmm.
But I was, besides photography, I was very interested in hi-fi. And so I tried to get a job at Shock Electronics because of my interest in what they sold. At that time I was pretty naive and I didn't realize that, they wanted salesmen. They didn't want enthusiasts necessarily.
Right.
But it was a great place to work and I really loved it. And it really ended up getting me into the field that I ultimately ended up in, which was computers and high technology. But, before that, I was totally certain I was going to be a photographer for my career and for my entire life while I was in high school. And even when I was at the University of Minnesota, I was really just sort of going through the motions of going to college because that's what you were supposed to do.
Mm-hmm.
But I was already doing some professional work, and I figured when I finished college, that's what I would do. But sort of life intervened, and I ended up going to work at a little advertising agency doing photography and copywriting and sales, and then, story goes on and on and on.
but you're able to monetize your passion, which is something that so many of us want to do, and so many hobbyists want to be able to make, you know, be able to eat from what they do, and that's a great thing.
And it's a very difficult thing to do in photography, right, because so many people love photography and everybody's got a camera.
Right.
But I did try it, and I did weddings and so forth when I was younger, but the advertising business kind of lured me away, and I kind of left photography for a while.
Let's think about the process. Some years go by, and these photographs are from the 70s. Were these in a box store away for a long time? Were these things that made it out once in a while to show?
They never made it out. Mm-hmm. I'll answer that part first. So they were stored away, and I've always been pretty anal about keeping this stuff.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, even in the digital realm, I almost never delete a photo. To mm-hmm. me, if I take a photo, I'm going to keep it.
Mm-hmm.
But they were in boxes, not organized in any way, which is, I'm paying the price for that right now, because they were basically just piled in boxes. And in fact, so mixed up, I can't imagine how they got that mixed up. But what happened is about 3 years ago, I finally got a high-quality scanner,
mm-hmm.
and I started the very tedious process of going through these things and starting to scan them. And I started coming across some of these images from this era, and they were very interesting just for me to see. It's like, oh my mm-hmm. gosh, I forgot about that, and oh, look at that, I don't remember taking that. And so I came across a few of these, and I decided to put them up on Facebook just to share with my friends.
And did you on your personal Facebook page?
Right, on my personal Facebook page. And they got some good reactions from my friends. And then a cousin of mine named Bill Ogile,
mm-hmm.
He wrote to me on Facebook, and he said, you know, there's this Facebook page called Old Minneapolis, and they have tons of stuff like this. You should check it out.
Mm-hmm.
And I did, and I immediately recognized kindred spirits mm-hmm. in that place. So I contacted Jesse Jameson, who I believe you know.
Mm-hmm.
Yep. And I said, hey, I got these pictures. Maybe you'd like to share some of them. And so that sort of gave me a goal of being a little more focused on going through some of these stacks to mm-hmm. see if I could spot anything that was of this genre. And so I initially found, I don't know, it must have been 75 or 100 images.
Mm-hmm.
And I just sent them all to him. And I said, here.
Have at it.
And he started sharing them one every day or so. And you know, it was very fun and gratifying because people liked seeing this stuff.
It's you know, the here's a little bit of an ironic twist. On the Old Minneapolis site and like even TC Media now, you get a lot of feedback. I wish things were like this, like it was 30, 40 years ago. I say, though, yes, but you would never be able to see these images because we wouldn't be sharing, we wouldn't be connecting. There's some great things that Facebook and the internet has provided us, a networking of people that have like-minded interest. You're very fortunate to have people that were photography-minded doing that. I haven't had so much with the VCR tape collecting. Luckily, it's been good because I'm the only one that's doing it. The other part is, it's like, don't you feel the same passion I have for it? Jesse had them, and he was posting them on Facebook, and he didn't watermark your name or anything.
He made a Facebook album, which is, you know, Mike Evangel's photos, and but what came out of that, and you touched on this earlier, maybe before we started recording, the MinPost,
mm-hmm.
Andy Sturtevant,
yes.
He was also paying attention to Old Minneapolis, and he noticed that it was kind of a phenomenon because mm-hmm. they had so many friends or followers. I'm not sure what the right name is for a page like that.
For a Facebook fan page. Right.
Fans, maybe that's the word. And it was growing so fast, and not only that, but just such enthusiastic involvement of the people who were there. And so MinPost and Andy noticed that, and he wrote an article about it, mm-hmm. about the Old Minneapolis page. And in the process of that, he talked about my photos, which had been featured there. And as a result of that article, that's how I met Andy when mm-hmm. he talked to me about it. But then Ann Regan, who runs the publishing group at the Minnesota Historical Society, she reached out to me and said, you know, we should put these photos together.
I'm looking at the one that's on page 13 of the book. And the book, again, is Downtown Minneapolis in the 1970s. And this book can be available at the Minnesota Historical Society. Is it on Amazon yet? Where can people
purchase it? It is on Amazon and Barnes & Nobles.
Okay.
And The official release date is November 1st, but they're already shipping it, so
great,
it is available.
We're going to have a lot of people who are going to want this book. Looking at page 13, this is a picture I saw last Christmas, I think, and I think I shared this on my Facebook page. The Nicola Mall decorated for Christmas, and you on the right you have Donaldson's, you have the Nicola Mall, the buses are on there, the Christmas lights are up. That's about as perfect a downtown evening in Minneapolis as you get right there. And the color in this picture, you think of a 70s picture as being very red-tinted because photography skills and lighting, you know, cameras weren't built for the type of images you see right now. And you had to have a really nice camera, a really good film, and really know what you're doing to get a really good shot, you know, in any time part of the film.
Or I got lucky.
Well, and luck is a big part of photography. I mean, how many pictures have you taken or have you seen where, how did you do that? That was by luck. You know, you snapped the shutter at the right time.
But I like to think that, you know, I've learned as I've gone, and, I could easily do a shot like this now. But back then, it was definitely, I was trying to figure out, how do you take a picture at night of these lights, and how do you get it to turn out?
And was that a print or was that a slide, this picture right here?
That was slide film.
Okay, it's gorgeous. And, again, if you're listening here, and if you have slides or photographs, videotape, film, don't toss it away. If you think there's not a machine that can play it, even if you don't want to do it, there's someone out there who will do it. I think the most daunting thing, and you mentioned this, buying a scanner, is the actual process. There's no joy in scanning. I mean, the joy comes when you see the actual product after you digitize or scan it. The actual labor of getting that set up and the physicalness of it, there's no joy in that, especially when you have to do repetitive 600 times.
Or 10,000. Like
or 10,000. However, the after consequence is so fantastic, though, to see this. And when you look at pictures on computer monitors now, you can zoom in on things that you couldn't see in a print. I've scanned some photographs, which weren't even taken that well, from the 60s, 70s, 80s. And you can square in on details, you know, using a good computer. You can see details you hadn't seen before because you're blowing these up. Did every photograph that you have in the book here, now, did you scan those personally, or did you go, after you started doing it, did you go to another...
No, I did them myself. And I've been scanning photos for many years, but as I mentioned, it was about 3 years ago that I could finally afford a really good scanner. So, and, you know, if you go back to that shot you were just talking about, I don't remember specifically, but there's a pretty good chance that slide was too dark. And so that when I looked at the slide, when I got it back from processing, it probably was a little disappointing.
Right.
But a good scanner can bring out everything that's there.
Right. Right.
And make it look better. So for me, that's one of the biggest joys of this whole project, is that many of these photos were never even printed.
Right.
You know, I developed the film, and I would make what are called contact sheets, if you're familiar with those, so very small prints of each image. And I'd scan through them, and I'd find a couple that were interesting, and maybe I'd make enlargements of those. But the rest were never printed. So it's literally true that some of these images, I was really seeing them for the first time when I scanned them.
I find this, what I find interesting also is when you look at a photo of downtown, and you take the second one, and then you see it's kind of like those puzzles, you know, how many things are alike and different. Yeah. And you see things, markings on buildings, which 30, 40 years of the test of weather and time, they're still there. Did you take a lot of photographs down on Block E? In the TCBD Now world, we get a lot of inquiries about Block E footage. Most footage I have comes from crime that happened on Block E, but... Again, it's such a fantastically notorious part of our past that there was this part of downtown Minneapolis that was known for, you know, as much as crime, but had some of the more interesting, colorful bars and tales and people, and we call them, you know, today they call it hipsters today, but some of the bohemian artists were all part of this Block E part, which became a parking lot, and then it became shopping, then it became the Mayo Clinic. It's changed about four things in 30 years. Did you get a lot of shots of that district?
Well, I did not, really, and it's interesting what you just said about sort of the types of characters and the nightlife that went on there. And, you know, this might sound a little goofy, but, you know, I'm a young kid from New Brighton. If you've ever been to New Brighton, it's about as sort of milquetoast as you can
get. They got a great mall there, though.
They did. And they used to have the world's best mall, Apache Plaza.
That's right.
But so going downtown, when I first started to go downtown Minneapolis, this was just such an eye-opener for me to see, you know, different different cultures and people of different, you know, economic backgrounds that I had never seen before. Mm-hmm. I mean, the idea of people begging on a corner, mm-hmm. which is, you know, I know you don't call it begging anymore, but, right. you know, panhandlers yep. or things like this. This was incredibly fascinating to me. And that's why I happened to photograph these things, because I had literally never seen that kind of thing before. Mm-hmm.
Well, think of Minnesota in the 70s. You take downtown. Downtown was probably your most diverse spot in the state, probably.
Yeah.
St. Paul, Minneapolis, and maybe, you know, maybe parts of Minneapolis and Brondo, St. Paul. But the suburbs of St. Paul, you know, right now Minnesota's still growing. You know, we're still developing these growing pains of a diverse state.
Right.
Coming from New Brighton, I mean, and I say this again to love to our New Brighton, you know, listeners here, but there's it was very wonderbred in New Brighton.
Well, it was
coming to Minneapolis.
I mean, I love New Brighton, but it totally was. But back to your Block E question, you know, I was a little intimidated by some of that, because mm-hmm. it was a little more raw than I was accustomed to, for sure.
Mm-hmm.
And now I do regret that I didn't dive in a little deeper, because
it's
lost.
You can't be alone, because there's so few photographs, and maybe it's one of those situations where we don't want to know what's here, we don't photograph it, or there's photographs that are there. They're not for public viewing, because I think that a couple of things. One, I think that it's a bit fantasized, a bit, because I think that when things are gone, people remember them sometimes a little bit differently, more fondly than it was. Again, I think you have a very good perspective. Going down to Block E at that period was not something you do to relax. You actually had a purpose there. Either you're there to, get some chemicals, use some chemicals, go to Moby Dick's bar, and the cops were there frequently. And I'm not sure if we wanted that to be lasting in Minneapolis for a lot longer.
There's another part of Block E that I definitely participated in, which is sort of the other corner of Block E there, where there was a music land and a Schindler's and a Best Steakhouse and a couple of movie theaters there. Mm-hmm. So, and I think that's maybe what people remember so fondly of Block E, that it was so diverse. Right. It had everything going on in that little piece of Minneapolis.
This right here, this camera, looking at that page, again, the book is Downtown Minneapolis 1970s. Micah Vandals, our guest today. I'm looking at this block right here. What building is that? That building's still there, correct?
It is still there. It's that's the restaurant called Seven.
Ah, yes. Okay. See, I worked in the mill all week long before I come to KLDB mm-hmm. here. I worked downtown Minneapolis and look at some of these buildings. And even since I've been down there 12 years, buildings that have changed over names, and you see the scarring in the walls from all the bolted slants that have come up and down. It's fascinating. Let's take a break. We'll come back with our guest, Mike Evangelist, to have some more questions about your process and pulling these out of the closet and, really putting together a fantastic book. We'll come back here on KLDB Club 1220.
Hello, it's me, the Cat in the Hat. What am I doing here? I'll tell you just that. Come to Thuzico the Musical to see me and all my friends. October 30th is when the fun begins, November 22nd when it ends. So it's time to be excited. Don't be calm. Go get your wallet or go ask mom. AshlandProductions.org is the information spot for tickets, show info, directions, and whatnot.
Today's forecast is looking mighty delicious. We'll have some smoky hot pork chops starting at around 5 p.m. with a cool cucumber tomato salad breezing in from the north at about 6. It'll be a beautiful evening in the tri-state area, perfect for grilling. So be sure to pick up some New York pork chops on your way home. For your up-to-the-minute recipe forecast, visit porkbeinspired.com/forecast. Pork, be inspired. This message funded by America's Pork Producers and the Pork Checkoff.
Here's Dr. Rose Purvich from Stillwater Family Dental. Tell me about what insurance you accept at Stillwater Family Dental.
We take all insurances, but we are also our providers for Delta Dental and Health Partners.
What if I don't have dental insurance?
If you don't have dental insurance, we always do a discount for people that don't have across the board on people without insurance. But we also have financing, interest-free financing through Wells Fargo and CareCredit.
Stillwater Family Dental. Live life smiling.
700. That's 700. Now, normally when I say this, you'll remember the numbers of a famous British spy. But I'm asking you to remember 7009. You see, Quickfire Pizza now delivers to Stillwater. But you need to know the number. 439-7009. Quickfire Pizza. Baked in just minutes. Then delivered to you in Stillwater. So remember, 7009. Because Quickfire Pizza now delivers to Stillwater. 651-439-7009.
Twin Cities, Tom Osmond with our guest, Mike Evangelist. Mike wrote a book called Downtown Minneapolis in the 1970s, a great Christmas gift. It is out November 1st. You can buy it on Amazon or Barnes & Noble, so I highly recommend it. I want to play some audio here. I got a couple commercials that I have found in the course of digging through everyone's garbage the last couple weeks. Your garbage is my treasure. This is a defunct sandwich chain, and Bob, maybe you remember this. Remember Clark Submarine?
Oh, yeah.
Well, it's fondly remembered. They had this really great garlic powder sauce they had on their subs. And maybe we're so jaded now because some of the bigger chains, the bread tastes all the same to me. Do we have any of those sponsoring our show today? but I want to play this audio commercial here, and this is from 1980. This is Clark Submarine, and then there's a reason why I'm bringing this up, because we're going to talk about that.
For you, we start with a fresh Italian soft roll. Add Swiss cheese, crisp lettuce, mild Bermuda onion, red garden tomato, Italian salad oil, and seasoning. Then pile on ham, luncheon meat, cotto, and Italian salami to make it irresistible.
One of Clark's 15 locations is 9801 Aldrich Avenue South, Bloomington.
And there you go, the Clark Submarine. I post this to the TC Media Now Facebook page. Now, within 2 hours of posting this, we had a Super 8 film shot that our good friend Alan Freed had taken as a kid. We have a photograph of the St. Louis Park Clarks and also of the downtown Hennepin and 7th Clarks. And just looking at this with Mike here, you have pictures of this block in your book, not this angle of it, but you have pictures of this block.
That's right.
Now, again, this is amazing. In a matter of a couple hours, we found some shots of the same chain, a couple different pictures of businesses, not pictures of someone's relatives. These are business appeal pictures.
Well, I look at this photo, and obviously this guy is afflicted with the same thing that I've got, which is I take pictures of random buildings.
Mm-hmm.
And 40 years later, people think they're interesting to look at them.
How long do you think it took you? So when you pulled these out, and did you sample a few of them on Facebook? Is this you know, where did the, and I, you got some interest from, obviously from the MHS Press, but this had to have come after a lot of photos have gone on the internet to ask, who's this Michael Evangelist guy? We see his name on these photo credits, and who is he? I remember I asked Jessica, I said, who is this guy? He's got some great photos. Why have I not heard of him before?
Well, I can't answer that question, but it did take a while. I mean, I would say it was probably close to a year from the time I first shared some photos until the Min Post article mm-hmm. came out. And that's when things sort of heated up with the Historical Society. Before that, I forgot to mention this, they had reached out to get my permission to use one of my images on the cover of another book that they were doing, which was about the 60s, and it was a mm-hmm. picture of these two young girls hitchhiking on Hennepin Avenue.
Mm-hmm.
And so that was in sort of a collage. So that was my first connection with the Historical Society. And, I mean, they've been fantastic working on this book with me, and they did the layout and design and edited it, and they helped me get Andy Sturtevant to agree to come and write the essays to go along with it.
In the cover here, so there's a wig shop here. Is this the wig shop that is actually still downtown Minneapolis that is going away? There's a building in downtown Minneapolis that I know...
Not just, that I'm aware of.
There's a building in Minneapolis that just got purchased. It's one of the oldest buildings in downtown, and it's where the Advocate Bar is. It's where... Or the Devil's Advocate Bar is. It's where the... There's a wig shop, used to be an appliance store down there. I believe that is sold, and it's going to be redeveloped into something big, shiny, and high.
That's the story of Minneapolis.
Story of Minneapolis. What is the oldest building downtown Minneapolis? Do you know?
I don't know. That's a really good question. I don't know. I mean, certainly the
City Hall.
The City Hall is one of the older ones, mm-hmm. absolutely.
And if we ever have a great storm at City Hall, it's going to outlive all of us. That building is well made.
Yeah, you've probably seen it. There's some photos from the Library of Congress which have been shared by people that of the City Hall building with horses on the street in front of it and houses across the street from it. A row of houses. So it's changed a lot.
And let's talk a little bit about a couple of these buildings here. We have a lot of pictures of, and the Nicollet Mall was relatively a new concept. Nicollet Avenue was not new, but the mall was new. All vehicles besides buses were off the mall. And the IDS Center was, the Fauchet Tower gave up their crown of the tallest building in downtown Minneapolis to the IDS Center. It was there. And the IDS Center for a flyover country here in Minneapolis was as close to Sears Tower as we were going to get. And the Crystal Court was, you know, for the time, an amazing architectural piece of shopping indoors with skylight. That had been some good photo-taking moments there.
Oh, absolutely. And one of the themes kind of throughout this book is the fact that the IDS building was rising over everything during this time period, and it really did change a lot of things. But it, you know, the sort of immediate impact was it changed the way people walked down Nicollet Mall because they had to stop and look up at that amazing building going up.
Andy made a mention of this, and I'm going to mention it too. There's a lot of pictures of young women in this picture. I can tell it was a subject that you like taking pictures of, but there's some compared to, I think, what the 80s and 90s, which was more of a more so the 90s. I see the term in context of like grungier look, you know, darker colors, plaids. The 70s, it was bright, vibrant colors. You think of that Brady Bunch, you know, Cindy Brady and Marsha, and they're, you know, bright green and pink. That's what a lot of these women are wearing in these pictures.
Absolutely. And, I mean, there's probably some self-selection going on there that, you know, people who were wearing brighter color clothes probably caught my eye more than others. But yeah, I'm definitely guilty of taking pictures of young women when I was 17 years old.
Well, you know, they're all fully clothed and they're all doing, you know, they're all downtown, so they don't see nothing seedy here.
But I mean, you can contrast that to this 80-year-old woman in her full-length mink coat walking across Nicollet Mall there. So it's not all young women.
Oh no, and this is a great picture of us, and we'll assume she's maybe 65. No, it's a great picture of her in her mink coat, probably going to make sure her money's still in the bank, probably going to do some shopping at Dayton's, which was a ritual.
Well, everybody was shopping at Dayton's.
And there's a lot of great shots of Dayton's. You can see the old Dayton's logo. This is a good shot here. This is Hitchhikers on Hennepin Avenue. Now here we go into more of the grittier view of Minneapolis here.
Definitely.
And Elliot Gould and Candace Bergen and Getting Straight in color. and that theater
That's the Mann Theater.
Yeah, it's now the Skyway Theater, and I think now it's a sort of kind of burlesque kind of venue right now.
I think it's out of business right now, but I'm not certain about that.
So in the process of going through, what do you think it took you to do to digitize even the Minneapolis slides? How long do you think it took?
Well, it took me, I wasn't focused just on these. I was just sort of going through stacks of negatives and scanning them. But I'm about 3 years into that project, and I'd say I'm about half done.
Mm-hmm.
But I don't do it full time, obviously. I just, once in a while, I say, oh, I should put a few negatives in the scanner and scan them.
It takes
a long time. And the black and whites take much longer. This is a bit of a detail, but the scanners can automatically remove the dust from color, but they can't do that with black and white. And no matter how hard you try to clean it before you scan it, there's always dust and scratches, and so I have to manually go in and retouch that with Photoshop.
And, you know, I think that it's a perfect perfect world right now. I think that the technology is just right now for people that have these photographs and have these, hard copy artifacts to be able to share them, and you can share them either digitally, you can share them through a book like this. Did you ever think when you were doing these, you thought, you know, maybe someday this will be kind of a collection I can share with someone, or was that totally not even crossing your mind until recently?
No, it definitely did not cross my mind, and it's sort of this magical thing that happens to things when they get old, which is, you know, they have nostalgia attached to them, and the fact that, I mean, so many of these photos, and hopefully it's not obvious, but many of these photos I took, they were tests. I was trying to learn how to do one technique or another, or I was trying a different lens or a different camera.
Mm-hmm.
And so they never seemed like a body of work to me. They were just a whole bunch of separate photos. But with this 40 years perspective now on it, I can see that, oh, they are related, and they obviously they have a common theme, and which I didn't recognize when it was right in front of me, but now mm-hmm. from a distance, it's obvious.
You know, context and perspective, after that's all said and done, it always helps that. And then you can always say, oh, yeah, well, I had this idea all along. You brought in an artifact. I shouldn't say an artifact. You brought in a precious item here. Why don't you talk about this a second?
Sure. Well, you know, I know that you have a passion for, you know, we're sort of kindred spirits in being fond of old things and wanting mm-hmm. to make sure that they don't disappear. And I happened to listen to your show where you had Pat Miles on.
Yes.
And it was a great show, by the way, and it reminded me that I had this, so I went and dug it out. And what it is this copy of a book called A Member of the Family, and it's a book by Dave Moore. And it happens to be autographed, which is what makes it precious to me. And it was autographed in 1987. But Dave Moore, like many people from the Twin Cities, is just an icon isn't even the right word for it. It's just mm-hmm. way beyond icon. He's like a member of the family.
Right.
Hence the title of this book. And it was kind of a thrill for me. A little bit later in my career, I was in the video production business, mm-hmm. did a lot of industrial and training videos, and Dave Moore did a lot of voiceover work. And so I had occasion to work with him a few times, which is a big thrill for me, and he's a fantastic guy, as everybody tells mm-hmm. you he's a fantastic guy. But anyways, he signed this book for me, and so I was pretty excited about that. But there's a follow-up to this, which I haven't got to. So when we were working on this book, one of the things you do is we send out advance copies of the book to people who might say something nice about it.
Sure.
And then we hopefully put it on the cover when it's done. And obviously, since Dave Moore's passed, we couldn't mm-hmm. send it to him, although right. he would have absolutely been top of the list.
Oh, right.
Somebody to ask. But we did send it to Don Shelby
mm-hmm.
and a few other great Twin Cities people. And so there's a quote from Don Shelby on the back of the book, which I'm very proud of
That
he took the time to look at it and had some kind things to say about it.
You know, I think that even if you didn't grow up in the Twin Cities, if you're a member now, or if you live here now, you can really appreciate, you know, not only just knowing where we were to where we are right now, but just looking at just a snapshot in history. And when you look at whether you're a Clark's commercial, if you look at these photographs, the best way you can really put yourself back in that moment of history is to see it visually. And part of what I like to do with the TV part is when I put a half hour of news on from 30 years ago is try to imagine yourself watching that from an analog TV box again and putting yourself right in that moment of history. And with the pictures that I've seen, your work for a long time now, and seeing this book, that's for as clear and vivid as they are. You don't get much more vivid than that to be able to put yourself right back there in that time. If you like time travel and you like the old days, well, then you can just relive into this book.
Well, that's I tell my family that I think of my film scanner as a time machine
mm-hmm.
because it lets me, because of the quality, I can go, as you said, you can zoom into these things and you can see details that you didn't even notice at the time.
And people can get what they want out of things. Some people really like to see the fashion. Some people like to see the buildings, the architecture, the cars. I mean, you can see anything that you're interested in. You can see that in these old photographs, these books on the old Minneapolis site, which, again, I got to give Jesse credit because he's really created a great forum for people to be able to post anything they like about Minneapolis. He puts his cutoff date in 1988. I think the day Block E was destroyed is his cutoff date. But it spanned other, I won't call them copycat sites because that sounds like it's doing something wrong, but book called like sites like Old St. Paul, Flashback St. Louis Park, where the Clark Submarine photograph came from. You know, if you find yourself, and I thought this with tapes, that I'm the only person that's ever going to enjoy watching these old videos and keeping these. Well, it's not true. There's people out there. And the best thing is when you see people, you meet people that, wow, I think it's great. I have a few things, too, and I want to share those. You inspire people to be able to share what they have with others. And I think that, we have so much ability right now to be able to share our past and know our past better. Through sharing these photographs, films, whatever it is. That book by Dave Moore, we're lucky enough to have here, Stan Turner. He does our Saturday noon show, and he does a great request show during the week. And I tell Stan many times, you see people like Stan every night. You don't see your family every night. You see Stan three times a night on Channel 5, or hear him on the radio now. That's not a luxury you have with your extended family or even your own family in your house. You always could count on Stan or Dave Moore, whoever, Dan Shelby, to be there every night with you, and they are part of the family because you have a relationship with them. And even though it may be one-sided because it's a one-way communication streak, but that's what it is, and that's what TV has, TV and media has done to us, for better or worse.
That's right, and it's, you couldn't get more Minnesotan than Dave Moore.
No, and I think that people really appreciate. I think that Minnesotans, I've been in Chicago, I've been in Los Angeles, lived in Chicago for a while, and I don't think that people appreciate history and culture of Minnesota as much as Minnesotans do. And maybe I'm biased because I've been living here, and sites like Old Minneapolis and TCBD now are popular, but people that have been done very well here have adapted to the culture, know the people. We don't do well with people that kind of come in here and from Los Angeles and this is their stop to New York. Now we're a sophisticated audience. And tell me, what's the feedback in the book? It has to be good to be sharing the book with people and getting great feedback on it. And I'm not going to get too deep into your background if you don't want me to, but you've done some really other great things in the background. So, that's been your life. You've done some marketing for some. I'm going to bring up, you did work on the iPod, which has changed my life tremendously.
Well, I did. Yes, I did work at Apple, which came. It was this sort of unbelievable, impossible to predict thing. But really, since the Macintoshes came out in '84, I was pretty much involved with the Mac and Apple. But not Apple directly. It was always companies that made accessories for Macintoshes, companies that made software for Macintoshes. But what happened, the short version of the story is, in 1999, I was working with a German-based software company, and we had this really cool software that we wrote for making DVDs. This was when DVDs were brand new, and this let you put your videos on DVDs. And Apple liked it so much that they bought the company. So we all went to work at Apple. And while I was at Apple, I worked on that DVD stuff, but I also worked on the beginnings of iTunes. And I wasn't on the iPod team, but I was there sort of helping on the day of introduction of the iPod. I was there helping set up the presentation and all that. And so, yeah, it was a dream come true in so many ways to work there.
I mean, the iPod can be credited with the iPhone. We have a lot of listeners here who have iPhones. You can listen to the show on your iPhone, the new iMac. I mean, that iPod, and I remember I got one of the first iPods with a scrolling wheel. I tend to be a, the new technology I tend to pay a lot of money for, and then that's a better one comes out a year later, but I remember thinking, like, yeah, this is, for a tech guy like me, this is good, but this is not going to catch mainstream. Well, I that's why I'm, didn't bet on that one, right? And a couple of years later, it was everywhere. That's got to be it. That's a great thing to be part of that, too. I mean,
Well, to me, probably the biggest thrill of the iPod, which, as I said, I wasn't on that team, but I was one of the, when Apple has a new product like that, before it's ready to be, announced publicly, they have to test it. So they enlist the help of employees to test things.
Sure.
And so I was one of, it was either 50 or 100 people internally at Apple who got iPods about a month before they were announced. And I used to travel a lot back then, so I had an iPod with me in airplanes, but I had to keep it hidden, of course, right. So it would be in my briefcase. But I did have the white earphones. But back then, nobody knew what white earphones were. They were just earphones.
It looks like, if you watch Rocky, when Mickey has this hearing aid, I said, he's got his iPod on. He has that long white hearing aid on. So people just probably assumed you had a hearing device on, and literally you had the generation of the device that's going to change a generation of music listening.
And, the funny thing about it is I think that all of us who were testing that device at the time, we knew it was big because, I had had three other MP3 players before the iPod because I was one of those early adopters
you. Yeah, me too.
And the second I touched it, I said, this is unbelievable.
Tell you what, I had the CD Walkman, which you think about it now, I used to carry on CDs and I'd be traveling in a backpack with headphones and this disc changer, which it's laughable now, the fact that I lugged around a disc changer. And then, of course, your car, you had one plugged in. And then I had these MP3 players for a bit, which were junk. I mean, they really were junk. And you couldn't even tell what you were listening to. They didn't work right. And
you could put, like, 12 songs
12 songs, right. 12 of your favorite songs on. Hey, let's, Bob, let's take a quick break. We'll come back here. We'll talk a little more with Mike, and I got a couple more audio bits we'll talk about because we have some historical events we need to mention before the show's done today. So we'll be back on Flashback Twin Cities on KLBB.
You know what I like? A good spicy Irishman.
Ooh, and I love a strutting Tom.
Oh, what about Reuben or Rachel?
And how about that drunken Wilbur?
But you cannot forget about that stuffed Molly Malone, because those are just a few dishes at Pub 112 that are sure to snare the senses and subdue the appetite. And of course, after dinner, enjoy a nightcap at Molly Malone's Whiskey Lounge.
And of course, an Irish pub will have all your favorite beers on tap.
So here's to a long life.
And a merry one.
A quick death.
And an easy one.
A pretty girl.
And an honest one.
A cold beer.
And another one.
Pub 112 and Stillwater.
T-shirts! It's not a team without t-shirts.
Custom t-shirts from Custom Ink are the easy way to connect any group. Our online design lab makes it simple to create a shirt design that your group will love. Or you can easily upload your own logo. Whether you need one shirt or thousands, Custom Ink can print any size order. And we know you can't wait for your new t-shirts. That's why we offer free shipping, and on-time delivery is guaranteed. Get a free price quote today at CustomInc.com.
Club 1220 KLBB presents Community Calendar. Afton is having a trick-or-treat trail this afternoon. Visit businesses along the trail for treats, crafts, games, and a costume contest. The Harriet Alexander Nature Center in Roseville is having a Halloween spooktacular today from 4:30 to 7:30. There will be a carnival, live animals, and nature programs. The popular Johnsdale Paranormal Group is back at the Warden's House Museum in Stillwater for programs at 3 and 7. They'll be talking about all things spooky. Visit the Washington County Historical Society website for more information. The American Red Cross is holding a blood drive today at Kowalski's Market in Oak Park Heights. Stillwater High School presents the comedy You Can't Take It With You tonight at 7 and Sunday at 2. Tickets are being sold at the school. If you have an item for KLBB's community calendar, you can send it to me, Jeff, at klbbradio.com.
Flashback Twin Cities, Tom Osborn here. We got a final 2 minutes for you, the big event coming up on November 12th. I want to talk about.
Yeah, I just wanted everybody to know that we're having at the Mill City Museum in Minneapolis on November 12th, starts at 6 p.m. Sort of a reception and launch for the official launch of the book. And there'll also be an exhibit of some of the photos from the book that'll be there through April. And along with that, there will be a slideshow running of some outtakes and images that didn't make it to the book.
Great.
So it's free to come, and we hope everybody will come. And I'll be there along with Andy, my brilliant co-author.
Yeah, I did an event with him a while back. He had some people that had some unique hobbies, and I was put one of them on his panel a long time ago. It was fun. Andy's a great guy. He does some great writing from InPost. The book is Downtown Minneapolis in the 1970s, Mike Evangelist. It is available on Amazon. It's available on Barnes & Noble. I think that, again, if you like history, you're going to like this book. The pictures are gorgeous. And come again to November 12th at the Mill City Museum, which is on Washington Avenue. Correct?
It's just off Washington.
Just off Washington. Mike, we'll have you on again. I want to play a quick commercial because we play commercials here at Flashback Twin Cities. This, now I want to precursor to our female listeners. This is not a current commercial. This is an old one, but I think you're going to laugh at it.
You know, a lot of women don't know how to drive. For freedom's sake, don't you owe it to yourself to learn to drive today at Montgomery Ward Driving School? Get behind the wheel training. All lessons are private. One instructor, one student. At Montgomery Ward, you get free pickup at home, work, or school, and cars are dual controlled and air conditioned.
And again, everyone, this is an old vintage commercial, but I got a lot of hits this last week, so I had to share it with everyone. I don't think Apache Mall, Northtown Wards are still in business, but Nancy, our friend there, is telling you how to learn the skills of driving. Mike, it's been great. We'll have you on again, and again, looking forward to seeing more of your work in Old Minneapolis and everywhere else so we get to see it.
Thanks very much. It's been great fun.
We'll see you next Saturday here in Flashback Twin Cities on KLBB Club 1220.